I'm Carla with Royce Walk, and these are just some thoughts on a Sunday. And what I do on these weekly updates is I share a few thoughts, and I also share where we're at in helping some Afghan Christians on their immigration journey. And I always give a brief summary of how I got involved in this, because it's kind of a weird thing and kind of a crazy story. But I have a friend named Mark Ritchie. He is he's an author. That's how I got to know him. I read his book, Spirit of the Rainforest, and I did a review on it. And he said, this was actually on Amazon. And he said, oh, great review. Do you want to do a review of some of our other books? And so that kind of started just our friendship, how I got to know him. And then 2 years ago, I guess it was, he saw a Bible study video I did on Job 19. And he said, great teaching. Would you like to teach some women in Pakistan for a Bible study? And I said, sure. And then that one thing led to another. And I spoke at some pastors' conferences. This is all via Zoom. All of this is via Zoom. And I sat in on some of his classes that he was teaching. And then just about a year ago, he had some health issues. And so I took over his Afghan Bible studies. He had met them because the Pakistani pastors that he was working with had helped the Afghan Christians when they evacuated to Pakistan. And so that's how they got connected to Mark. And so then just about a year ago, Pakistan was threatening deportation if they didn't have valid visas. And so we were just trying to figure that all out and just kind of keep them safe and going and figuring out next steps and where to go. And so into all that enters his friend Don, Don Shire. He has a ministry called Don Shire Ministries International. And Don agreed that any donations made to, sorry, just a second. What am I doing here? Okay. I lost my banners. Any donations made to his ministry at Dunshire Ministries International, and if you select Race to Walk, then it will go to these people. So he has a lot of different ministries that he does. He has a lot of different efforts. He has orphanages in Haiti. He supports refugees in Ukraine. I don't know. He has a lot of things that he does. So if you go to donate there and you select the option, you'll see that there are a lot of options. And so it doesn't go to my people unless if you select Race to Walk. So anyway, so that's that. And this whole thing has just been kind of a process. This has been kind of a heavy week. It wasn't that it was bad. It's just that sometimes, like, when you're around people, everybody's talking about the holidays and all the things that they're doing. And then to be connected to a group of people that are in like such dire straits, because last year Pakistan was, you know, cracking down on foreign nationals that didn't have valid visas, and they have not been issuing visas to Afghans. So, but they're doing that again now, and it's even worse because they are even deporting. They're taking all these Afghans to camps, and some have already been deported. Others are just there in camps. I have some stories about that I'm going to share. But it's even people who have that are waiting, that have visas that have been approved to other countries, that are waiting. People who have been in Pakistan for years that have Pakistan refugee registrations, which is a separate thing. People who have UNHCR certifications. It's just even more extreme. And it's a little difficult to, I don't know. It's just hard. It's always a heavy thing, but it's extra heavy when, you know, people are like, oh yeah, you know, we're gonna do this, this, and this. And, you know, they're talking about Black Friday sales, and you know, have people that they eat one meal a day. It's kind of difficult sometimes to kind of go back and forth between that. So that's been heavy. But one of the good things that did happen this week is there was somebody that came into our group that was referred in, and he's going to be, he's Charlotte. Charlotte and I have a live stream coming up pretty soon. So yeah, I have to be kind of brief. I was going to do this live stream earlier, but the day got away from me. So anyway, but somebody came, and he's going to be a translator for me. And he actually has a lot of connections. And usually when I talk to people about getting them out, pathways out, I'm usually like the optimistic one that says, oh yeah, you can do these pathways, it should be an option. And he actually has connections with different organizations that I think we might be able to get some things moved. So I was organizing all my information. I use ClickUp, if you're familiar with it. It's a contact management system. I have a project that I'm trying to manage all the information that I've collected over the past year. And one of the options is you can put locations on there. So I have one list that has all the families. And so this is my visualization of where they're at. So it's frustrating because things are slow, it seems to me, but it was also encouraging to look at this because if you can see where the blue spots are, those are where we have people. So we have some people in Afghanistan, Pakistan, but we also have people in Brazil and Germany and the US so far. And we have people that are waiting for evacuation to the, or resettlement to the UK, into Germany, into Sweden. So I've seen some movement over the last year, so that's good. But the title of the stream I was going to talk about today is thankfulness versus gratitude. And you know, we had a whole holiday of it's supposed to be about celebrating thankfulness, being thankful for what we have, being thankful for the country that we have. I think I remember this right. It was Abraham Lincoln that proclaimed a national holiday, and it was in, I think it was 1863, and it was a day of prayer for the nation. Actually, this was in the middle of the Civil War, and so it is a time that we should remember that we are very fortunate. And okay. They, especially, you know, considering that in, that was a time when we almost lost our country, and the Afghans have lost their country. And a lot of times I think people in the US think of, the way they speak of people that are looking to immigrate, they talk about them as like, they're not actually human beings, and, or that they're, you know, going to be a drain and on society. And that's not true. I mean, immigrants actually boost the economy when they come. But I mean, the people that are in my group are, I mean, they're way more official than I am. I mean, I have people in my group that literally were pretty high up in the Afghan government, the Republic, you know, they're still sitting there stuck. They have attorneys, doctors, pharmacists, nurses, you know, people that were, a couple of people that were really involved in elections, really official people, and they're sitting there stuck. And it could happen here. You know, it could happen here. It's they, especially the young people that are in my group, they grew up when NATO was there. They never knew, some of them never knew what it was like when the Taliban was in power. And before NATO came in, and they, I can't tell you how many times that they've said, I couldn't even imagine that this could happen again. Couldn't imagine it, that the Taliban would be back in power. And things that you don't think could happen, could happen. And I think that we should, you know, when you think about being thankful, we say we're thankful for a lot of things, but are we really? I mean, does it translate into gratitude? Because we can know that we have a thing. We know we can be fortunate because we have our health, or we have a home, or we have a job, or we have food, and we can be thankful for those things. But does that really translate into having a mindset of gratitude, like recognizing that in the whole population of the world, that anybody that's living in the U.S. is in the most blessed in the world? Do we really understand that? to know that even if you're not in good circumstances, at least there's an opportunity, you know, to have some better options. And there's the majority of the people in the world, there's not even an option for a good opportunity. There's not an option. There's no justice system. There's no one that they can go to for help. Things just are the way they are. And the powerful devour the weak. That's the way it is. And I know that our justice system isn't great. We have a lot of problems. But when you look at it in the world overall, it's actually pretty darn good. And we should be grateful for that too and appreciate what we have. And I think if we spend a little bit of time listening to other people's stories and really realizing that it is just for the grace of God that we are in the situation that we're in and not somewhere else, then, and not in those other people's shoes, then maybe we would have a little bit more appreciation for what we have. Because America is a very individualistic society, but nobody does it on their own. Nobody does. It's all, even the wealthy who think that they do it all on their own, they're doing it within a framework and a construct that's been built by a lot of other people. And nobody does it on their own. And there are a lot of people that have been invested into our country, into our systems, into our government, into our schools that enable us to have what we have. And if we just don't even do anything about it and just take what's been given, at least we should have, I think, some gratitude for it. And I hope that anybody that listens to these, that at least they'll stop and think a little bit before they get caught up into, today it's like, do people in Congress really care about the problem that our immigration system is? No, because they just use it as a way to get votes. It's a political wedge. If they wanted to do something about it, they would, and they don't. They're more concerned about, building up their own campaign funds and their own getting benefits for themselves rather than doing the work that they were elected to do. But we don't have to participate in the propaganda. We have a choice. So I hope people think about that when they talk about illegals or, being so worried about open borders, which is not a thing, that you at least stop and consider that those are human beings that you're talking about, and they're just as important in God's eyes as you are. And we could be, it would not take all that much for us to be in the same sort of situation as the Afghans that are escaping Afghanistan are in. Would not take that much. I look at the stories all the time that are coming back out about what's going on in Afghanistan, Pakistan, some of the other countries in the area. And then I see some of the things that, different groups are trying to pull here in the U.S. Exactly the same. So anyway, those are just my thoughts for the week. I know the Thanksgiving weekend is almost over, but I hope you've had a little time to just sit and really look at what you have and where you're at and just reflect on that. And there's a saying, if everything was taken from you except for what you thank God for, what would you have left? I think that's a good thing to remember. So anyway, enough about that. I'm going to, one of the things I did want to share, I've mentioned before, I stream on StreamYard, which is, you can stream to multiple locations and like all the banners and backgrounds and all that stuff. It's just kind of part of the platform. And they are actually having a sale this week. So I'm going to have, I was going to put it up there. I'll put a link. Actually, there is a link in the description, but I'll put another one. If you go to the link in there, I'll get a referral if you sign up for it. But they're having a cyber sale. And this is the first time I've seen them do this. they're having a offering a special package, and it's an essentials package, and it's for $10 a month. And the only thing, I didn't spend a lot of time on this because I just first saw this yesterday, but the only thing different that I could see was that it would still have the watermark. So where you see Raised to Walk right now, that is something I put up custom, and that would have, if you're on this plan, it would say StreamYard, but it's actually a pretty good deal. You can stream to three different locations. And in comparison, this is their normal plan. So you can stream for free and you can try it out if you want. You just can't change the background. You can't change a watermark. You can only stream to one location. And then their next level plan is $25 a month. You can do three locations. And I can't remember. The thing about the professional plan, at $49 a month, you get eight locations. And then it also, the one thing that is really helpful, is like when we're doing our launch parties for an unexpected journal, every person on the stream, like when you download the recordings, it would separate out the audio and they'd have different tracks. So that's helpful. But that essential plan, if you don't care about having the StreamYard up in the upper right, that's actually a pretty good deal. And it's just, I think they're just offering it this week. So anyway, I'll have the link in there, but I thought that's actually a deal. So anyway, this is, I don't normally have things like this on there, but Malcolm Guite is a poet that he is somebody that we read when I was in the apologetics program I went to, and he had a published a sonnet on Thanksgiving. And anyway, I share that in the article that I publish for this live stream. So a day or two after I do the live stream, I also publish an article with all the links of the stories I'm going to be talking about. And there's actually quite a few more that I'm not going to do highlights on, just because there was so much that happened this week. But I also have a link to his sonnet, but I thought that was good. Just a good reading reflection for the week. But what's been going on in Afghanistan? Okay. So the Taliban, just a little history, if we've forgotten, they were in power in 2020, before NATO went in 2021 after 9/11, you know, when we invaded Afghanistan. They were in power. They came in power after the Soviets withdrew from the war in Afghanistan. There were all these tribes that were and groups that were fighting for control, and the Taliban took over. And they're a very extreme form of follow a very extreme form of Islam that actually originated in Saudi Arabia. And I'm probably going to say this wrong. I think it's called Diobani Islam, but they're very, very extreme. And before the Taliban, before the war with the Soviets, when they had the monarchy, and even afterwards, when they had a, it's kind of like a republic, they were actually pretty progressive. If you see, there's a person on Twitter named Stephen Jensen, and he's writing a book on Afghanistan, and he will post pictures of Afghanistan, you know, during the monarchy and before the Soviet war, and it's, you think it was just like any city in the West. I mean, it was a pretty progressive country, but after the Taliban took over, they're very extreme, and they're starting to implement all of the same things again now that they're back in power. So what they've done is they're banning any pictures of human beings and animals in books, on covers and in books. And when I read this, it was interesting because that's actually considered iconoclasm. We were actually read a little bit about that because Christianity went through a brief period where they were against icons and pictures. There are accounts that before this, this period, it was kind of the same time Islam started coming into being, like in 600, 700 AD, but there, before this, there were actually pictures of Jesus and the apostles that were destroyed during that time. this anyway. So when I was reading that, I was like, oh yeah, I kind of read about this before. But what this is doing, it's like, it's so this is somebody that posts a lot about stories in Afghanistan, and I think she reads Persian because she translates a lot of her tweets. But she writes, when you have a country that is mostly illiterate, like Afghanistan is, visual representation is needed for one to know what is going on, or what is provided. So this is talking like in medical services. The Taliban are proving their inability to, by telling Afghans that they cannot provide that visual documentation. And then, so, and this is just an overview of the things that, what education is like. So there, you know, if you can't, there's already a problem with getting medical service in Afghanistan. They've banned women from any education after age 10. And then they're going to be training doctors without any visual representation of humans and bodies. So it just, this may have worked, you know, back in the 1300s. It doesn't work in the 21st century, but this is who is running Afghanistan. The other thing, the other new decree, it's every single week, it's something crazy coming out. They are banning weddings, or not banning weddings, but they're banning the use of music at wedding celebrations. That's a new thing that came out. And those are just kind of like just more oppression and sucking the joy out of life. But they are still, even though they're in charge of the government, they are still terrorists and thugs. So this is a story of a police officer, a Hazara police officer that was killed. Hazaras are an ethnic group. Pashtuns are the ruling tribe, usually. That's the Taliban are Pashtun. They're also, Pashtuns are usually Sunni. Hazar are Shia. So this is part of the reason that there's conflict, besides there's a lot of ethnic prejudice. But this is talking about the genocide that's still going on of Hazaras, and nobody's saying anything. This is another story about journalists, 10 journalists that were killed just recently, and this is not new. I mean, this is another account of 108 cases of journalists that have had violence against them in 2023 in Afghanistan. And keep in mind, during this time, all through 2023, that there's been a big push in the international community to recognize the Taliban. And it's just, anyway, some of the worst violence is actually against women. And this is an account of a woman that was shot. I don't know if I have it up here. I have another one. There's a video of a woman being beaten just in public. This is a student that was arrested because she was protesting with, you know, because women can't go to school. So she was arrested. It hasn't been released. And also, during this, they ban contraceptives because basically they just see women as breeders. They don't see them as human beings. But all of this, like, while we spent 20 years in Afghanistan, and we went in because the Taliban were harboring Al-Qaeda, which is Al-Qaeda attacked us. And part of the promise was that Al-Qaeda was not going to, they were not going to support Al-Qaeda, which is not true. So Al-Qaeda is still out there. They're still encouraging Muslims to basically attack Jews and all Zionists. And the Taliban actually provide financial support to Al-Qaeda. I mean, they know that they're there, and they actually support them. And we support the Taliban. So our tax dollars are basically going indirectly to Al-Qaeda, who attacked us. So it just makes perfect sense. While all this is going on, the Taliban are actually getting visas to go. Their country's a mess, but they'll get visas and they'll go get medical treatment in other countries. And then, I don't know if I have this up here. There was another story where the Norwegian embassy, I think, gave the Taliban members a visa to go to the European Union. And so Germany and the Netherlands were upset, and I think they were suing them because they were, because if you get a visa into the European Union, you can pretty much go anywhere. And so that was an issue. But the Afghans that are at risk can't get out, but the Taliban can pretty much go wherever they want, which does not make any sense at all. Now, I don't know what this means. This was something about, there have been a couple things stories that have come out recently that have talked about the collaboration between Pakistan and the Taliban. And this is just weird. It's just, they're saying that the this one group claimed that they received a directive from the Afghan Taliban instructing them to prohibit their operatives from maintaining long hair or wearing of traditional, I don't even know what that is, Wazakani packles and dressing. And they did that, which is just weird. I don't know. There's sometimes I come across stories that I'm not familiar enough with the dynamics of what's going on to really kind of understand it, but there's just some weird stuff going on. But the this, I think I explained last week that Pakistan has a parliament. But if the elections don't turn out the way the military wants, the military will basically take over. And they got rid of the prime minister. I think his name was Imran Khan. And so there have been demonstrations about it. And this was an article talking about how they don't think that the Pakistan military is going to be able to maintain control. Pakistan military are the ones that gave the recent orders about deporting all the Afghans. And it kind of seems to me like there must have been coordination, because this is a note that it's not just Pakistan, but it's also Iran and Turkey. They're also deporting all the Afghans. So I'm not really quite sure what the goal behind that would be, but I don't know. I mean, I would think that would be something people would be looking at. I don't know. When they gave the order, this is at the beginning of the month, and they basically gave them a 30-day notice that they were going to have to pack up and go back to Afghanistan. Really last minute, 30 days. This is a picture of the camps that they're being, they basically arrested and taken to, and this is an article about the babies that were born in that. And let's see, I guess I already did that. Okay, the other thing that Pakistan is doing. Okay, so they have to have visas to stay in Pakistan, and theoretically, Afghans should not have to pay for it because they are. Should have refugee status, but they do. And regular visas are not really being given to Afghans. So they have to get emergency visas, which are pretty much, it's basically extortion to be able to get them. So that was visas to stay. So now they have to have visas to stay. They also have to have exit permits to leave, to go anywhere. To cross a border, to go out on the plane, you have to have an exit permit. Last year, when we were filing for exit permits, I think when I read it online, it was like $9 US. But in order to get it processed quickly, it was $30 US. They're charging $830 for exit permits now. And they're requiring it to be paid by credit card. So here's the thing. Afghans don't have bank accounts in Pakistan. They also do not have credit cards. The only way you can get money to them is by Western Union or MoneyGram. And usually they have to have an intermediary to accept it because they can't pick up money unless if they have a valid visa. And even then, I was just told by one of the people that the location that they got money from, that they pick up money from, told them that they weren't going to be able to pick up money again after that. Afghans would not be able to pick it up, even though they have valid visas. So Pakistan knows, they know this. So when they're charging $830 for an exit permit, they know the Afghans don't have it. They know they don't have credit cards. So this is basically indirect extortion of Westerners that are trying to help the Afghans because they know that that's who's going to be paying it. This is a comment from, like, he's setting up a safe house for a friend of his that's an Afghan. And this is a private citizen that's doing this. And the question is, why isn't the government doing this for the people that we said that we were going to help, which is a very, very good question. So because of this crackdown from Pakistan, some countries are actually moving people. Australia is expediting some of this is for people who have a visa path because they worked with the Australian government. And so they're anybody that has that, they are facilitating getting them out. And you could say, hey, it's been 2 years. I totally agree. Totally agree. Should not have taken this long, but they are doing that. Which, okay, compared to us. So I just realized this yesterday. I did not know until yesterday that we have a Bureau of South and Central Asian Affairs. I was reading the fact sheet about the U.S. and Pakistan, and we are Pakistan's number one supporter of foreign aid, as well as their number one economic partner. So you would think that we would have a little bit of leverage in negotiating with them for, like, hey, don't deport the people that we're working on getting out. And their excuse has been that the reason that everything is so slow is because they're not being allowed to set up a resettlement service center in Pakistan where they could process the applications more quickly. That's ridiculous. I said this last week, our State Department is a joke. They're a total joke. If this is true and you still can't negotiate a resettlement service center and you have absolutely no pull with the government, what good are you? What good are you? Pakistan is a third world country and they're leading our State Department around by the nose. What did our State Department do? Oh, they put up a WhatsApp number finally after that. They had put up a helpline that was a Virginia number, like Afghans have international calling. Took them 2 weeks to get a WhatsApp number, and then it was wrong. So they had to change the WhatsApp number. This is what our State Department is doing. And I'm not going to read through the whole thing, but, oh yeah, because I have to make this short. But if you go to the article on my website, there is this big, long thread of this person talking about Blinken. Like, he was the head of the CIA, was actually sent to negotiate with Hamas because he said, basically, Blinken's a joke. He's the head of our State Department. He's like, he's never been in a war, but he's just like, it's like he likes playing war games and he's just incompetent. That's what it sounds like. Why he's in that position, I have no idea. But that's actually a good read. And it explains so much about Afghanistan. It just totally explains so much. So anyway, to wrap this up, I don't know if it published today or what, but the Holy Post, this is the podcast that Phil Vischer does, the VeggieTales guys, that's what he does now. He does this Holy Post podcast. They have a episode where they actually went to the border to see what was going on. And they said they talked to border agents. They talked to people, immigrants that were, you know, waiting to be at the border. And they were talking about the, I've mentioned this before, in order for someone to claim asylum, they have to be standing on U.S. soil. So that means they either have to be here and claim asylum while they're here, like on some other visa, or they have to get to a port of entry and claim asylum. At the southern border, they have to, there's this app that they have to schedule an appointment on. And they said it was just, they showed me this app. You can actually download it. I actually have it on my phone, but they said it's just, you have to hope that you get internet connection and there's only a certain number of appointments open each day. And so they're showing them what it's like trying to get this, an appointment on the app. And they talked to border agents and they said, well, what would help you? And they said comprehensive immigration reform. Yeah, because it's a mess. It's a complete mess. And they also explain, it wasn't very long. I mean, it's kind of like a just very brief overview of what the issue is with the at the border. And the thing is, when people come to the border, some of them will, you know, they can sit there and wait forever to try to get this an appointment on the border app, an appointment there. But some of them cross the border and then they find a border agent to surrender to so they can claim asylum. And a lot of them really aren't familiar with our asylum laws. And they think that if they come, that they're going to have an option. But the reality is that most of the people who come they're not allowed to stay. You don't get asylum based on economic opportunity or even because you live in a country that's very violent. You have to be at a personal risk in order to be able to claim asylum and for it to be granted. And so when people talk about, there's no such thing as open borders. There are a lot of people that are coming, but they're not coming. And our border policies really don't have anything to do with that. It has to do with their originating countries. The situation is so bad that they'll risk that trip because that's a better option than what is there for them in their home country. Now, I did read an article one time that I think I did find an article that said that, no, that's not the one I wanted. Is this the one? No. Okay. I don't think I have it. This is actually really good. The Border Patrol has kind of an explainer video about our border processes, and the screenshot that I have here is the federal government does not provide or help or support for non-citizens, and this is true. So even when they come and they claim asylum, it's 180 days, 180 or 90 days. There's a period of time when they can't even work. They can't even get a job. So if they come and they claim asylum in that way, then they have to, the only way they're going to be able to operate at all is if they have family that can, or friends that can support them. And what one person said is that they'll come and they'll dump them off, you know, in the middle of a city, and they'll say, okay, well, you need to show up at that, you know, at your hearing at a certain date. And then it's basically up to churches and private nonprofits and to help those people. If we had faster processing, and if it was a direct, like, you're coming, you're not getting, your asylum is going to be denied. If we had, like right now, I don't know what it is like today, but just a few months ago, our asylum backlog was over a million cases. And so there's this big delay before they get asylum. I'm sure there's people that work under the table. And again, who's benefiting from that? It's U.S. businesses that are getting cheap labor, because a lot of times they're exploited, right? Because they can't really complain or they're going to be deported. That happens. So what I was going to say was, one of the articles that I read said that there's four countries that they are, they either have to apply for affirmative asylum, which means they're applying from their home country and before they can come, or they have to make an appointment with the border app. And if they don't do one of those two things, their asylum case will be automatically denied. They said that those four countries, there is a higher rate of compliance with making an appointment with the border app. They said for Haiti, it's 100%. And I think the reason why is with Haiti, they have, when they deport people, they have flown them all the way back to Haiti. Because what happens is with a lot of them, they just kick them back over into Mexico. And the article that I was reading about, that was talking about asylum denial rates. So 65% of asylum cases are denied overall. If they're heard in a Texas court, that number is 90%. And so they'll just deport them back to Mexico. And then that causes a problem for Mexico, and that is causing an issue with like international relations with Mexico. If they want to make more of an impact, it is more expensive to fly people back to their home country, but I think it would have more of an impact on this isn't going to get you out of the situation. This isn't going to work if they were actually consistent about that, like what they did with Haiti. I know that with the Afghans, you may say, how are Afghans ending up at the southern border? Brazil has been off and on offering humanitarian parole visas to Afghans. And so a lot of them have gone there, and the situation is hard there too. And so they come up through South America and then up into Mexico and go to the southern border. And I have told them over and over and over again, that's not a good plan, that that's going to cause a problem. And it's taken a lot, me saying that over and over again, for it to finally sink through. And I'll still get people contacting me, friends of theirs that are contacting me, they're going to the border, and I'm like, that's not a good option. But the thing is, they listen to our media too. And so when they hear, you know, talking heads yapping about open borders, they think it's a real thing, and they think it's true, and they think it's an option. And so when you're under threat of death, and it's go back to the Taliban, be killed, go through a hard journey and get to America, that's what they pick. Because the other thing is that every single one of them I've talked to, other than a couple of them that have family members in another area, they all want to come to the U.S. And I've told them, you know, if you can get asylum or a visa to Canada or Germany, take it, because your life will be better. I mean, it will be hard for them here. It's hard for Americans. We're number 21 in the quality of life for people, for regular people. And Canada's number 3, Sweden's number 1, Germany's number 7. If you can get to one of those places, do it. Your life will be a lot better. They don't believe me. They still want to come to the U.S. I mean, that is like their number one choice. And so I wish we lived up to what they see us as. If we did that, we would, even close to living up to what they saw as us, we would be so much better off. But anyway, the other thing, so I want to end with, this is a quote by a tweet by somebody, and she said that sometimes, you know, you look at the problems of the world and it just seems so overwhelming, and people say, well, what can I do? And people think, you know, it is, you see it as a big thing. And so people do nothing because you can't change the world, but you know what? You can change the world for one family. And that's what one of my friends is doing. She helped me out by reading with the kids of two of the families, and they have gotten to be friends, and she is basically kind of dedicated herself to raising money for them so those kids can go to school in Pakistan while they're waiting for their sister to find them a way out. And their sister has been, you know, trying to move heaven and earth to find a way out for them anywhere. But I just got a call from her last night, and she's going to make latkes as a fundraiser to for the tuition. But she's just, you know, you can't fix the problems of the world, but you can pick one person or one family to make a difference for. And we can only do what we can do, but I think we are required to do what we can. So anyway, those are my thoughts. Again, if you, I'm going to wrap this up because Charlotte and I are having a live stream at 8, and that's going to be on our Advent read along we're doing together. So if you want to go on to that, you can. But anyway, I hope you keep all my people in your prayers, and Giving Tuesday is coming up. And so if you'd like to help our people out in your end of year giving, you can go to DonShareMinistries.org and select Race Walk. And that will be very much appreciated. So it doesn't take a whole lot to make a big difference. So anyway, thanks for watching, and I will see you next time.